speaker's definitely on, having heard my pen. Welcome everybody to this afternoon's symposium on transhuman minds. Is cognitive enhancement a human right? Really glad you could all be here. I'm going to start with the announcements of regrets that Daniela Cercui-Ducray can't be here. She's just had twins and was unable in the end to make the flight. But we're delighted to have our other three speakers with us. And another little mini announcement, which is a change to the running order, which is our second and third speakers have decided to switch places. As many of you will be aware, this is the second symposium in our 2008 series, People Power for the Third Millennium, Technology, Democracy and Human Rights. And I hope those of you who are not yet familiar with the series will take a look through your information packs and perhaps note in your diaries the remaining dates in the series. And the next symposium you will notice is not going to be happening here at the RSM, our regular venue, but is going to be happening at the Palace of Westminster. We hope that we will have a few more parliamentarians with us on that occasion. Today's topic of cognitive enhancement recently became the focus of an exchange in the journal Nature, which I'm sure some of you followed with interest. Two scientists working in neuroscience at Cambridge wrote a review of some of the ethical questions raised by these cognitive enhancing drugs, prompting, amongst other things, a discussion on Nature's website, a forum. And it was fascinating international discussion from people across disciplines, and interesting in that there was an emphasis on the feasibility of regulation over and above the ethics of the issue, which is interesting in a scientific journal. And this afternoon, we look forward to hearing opinions from across the academic spectrum, philosophy, social science, and applied science. And we also look forward to the perspectives of Professor Fitzmaurice, who has made the transition from academia to industry. But first, it is my pleasure to introduce Professor Ruud Termeulen, who will be speaking on Will Enhancement Make Us Better? Ethical Issues of the Use of Biotechnology to Enhance Our Cognitive Capacities. If I give a few little bits of intro. Professor Ruud Termeulen is a psychologist and ethicist. He is Chair for Ethics and Medicine and Director of the Centre for Ethics in Medicine at the University of Bristol. He has been working as Professor of Philosophy and Medical Ethics and Director of the Institute for Bioethics at the University of Maastricht in the Netherlands. He is currently the Principal Coordinator of the ENHANCE Project, funded within the Sixth Framework Programme and dealing with the ethical, philosophical and social issues of enhancement technologies. He has been working also on a broad range of issues in medical ethics, particularly issues of justice in healthcare, ethical issues of healthcare reform and health policy, ethics of evidence-based medicine, ethical issues of long-term care, and ethics of research and research ethics committees. So that's a broad spectrum from which to inform us today. Welcome, Professor Termeulen.
Right. Sorry. Right. Thank you for the invitation to speak here. I'm very honored. And I have a bit of a problem. I just broke my glasses, so I have an old one, which I can't read this, so I have to try another one. Right, this is better. Okay, I can read this. I can not so good read that. Right, enhancement technology makes us better. Well, why this title is a bit challenging? Because often you've heard people say, well, enhancement is something good. The word enhancement, say, improvement, getting better by better cognition, or, for example, also in sports medicine and in mood. So in our ENHANCE project, which was funded by the European Commission, indeed, we talked about various issues of enhancement, including cognition, but also mood, what's called mood enhancement, the use of pharmaceutical drugs to elevate your moods and to feel better, use of genetic technologies in sport to improve functioning, physical functioning, and issues also of lifespan extension was also seen as part of the enhancement technologies. You see also there, Jan Hans, Anders Sandberg, who was speaker today, is also part of that project. And what I want to do today is to have some reflections on various issues of enhancement, particularly issues of justice and access to enhancement technologies, also issues about the role of technology in our lives, more philosophical reflections, and also to talk about distinction between therapy and enhancement, because that's an ongoing debate in the ethics of enhancement. Is there a distinction between therapies on the one hand and enhancement on the other hand? And I think it's not irrelevant to think about distinction, certainly if you talk about funding of these technologies by our society, creating access to enhancement technologies, because we think if something is a kind of a therapy, we think there is more justification to fund that from societal resources. If you think it's something like an enhancement, you think, well, is that really an issue that we should provide access to by way of our via our healthcare system or our societal funds? So so I will go to various of these issues. First of all, some introductory comments is well, we can see that biotechnology has reached a stage that we can make radical changes of humanity. Biotechnology may be applied to make people think better, to make them feel happier, rather said, so they can live longer, improve their functioning in sports and athletics. These were also the themes of the Enhance project, which we researched all those themes with our group in Bristol, the group in Oxford, where Anders is coming from, and the group in Milan and in Goethe in Stockholm. In Sweden. So there was a report by the President's Council of Bioethics in 2003. It's called Beyond Therapy. And that Beyond Therapy means that there are improvements and enhancements have their roots in the normal applications of technologies that are healing of illness and the relief of suffering. For example, the use of modafinil, which is often used in cognitive enhancement as part of the cognitive enhancement debate, is in fact a medication to treat people who have sleeping disorders, keeping them awake. And you can use this, for example, also used in the military, in American military, to keep pilots awake during long flights, long haul flights. The use of cholesterase enhances, the treatment of dementia. You have certain drugs to improve memory, which is in fact used also by students to have a better memory, or the use of Ritalin, which is used for attention disorders, is used to improve your attention during specific periods when you have to study for your examinations, and is used by students, particularly in the United States, to improve their results during examinations. So that means that it comes to a kind of a second use, efforts to improve feeling, mind, and physical performance. And so what the ethical analysis is about is, I think that the enhanced technologies, the use of technologies beyond therapy, going beyond the normal application and uses for other purposes than just suffering, the combat of disease and healing, is that right? New challenges. Usually bioethics, I think a key area in bioethics, a key issue, is the assessment of benefits and risks, and that's still an important issue also. If you try to assess the ethics of enhanced technologies, you talk about potential risks and potential benefits. And potentially the risks can mean if there are severe risks to using these drugs, for example, to improve cognition, and you're trying to use in the wider context. Then you're talking about regulation and try to contain the risks. And so respect for autonomy of individuals is also a key theme in bioethics. And just distribution of benefits and burdens, issues of justice. And I think all these three issues are still very relevant for the ethics of enhancements, but there are still some other issues. For example, issues about consequences in our society and the social consequences of technology. And I will come back, for example, the issue of eugenics is often mentioned in the debate. Does enhancement, is it not reminiscent, is not something that has to do with eugenics, as has been eugenic efforts in the past? Are we not doing the same nowadays and trying to improve our function, get a, a new race or a new kind of humanity? Are we changing humanity enough? What's about the people who have handicaps and they might feel that they are discriminated because you're talking about enhancement and getting better performances, etc.? So these are part of the social issues which are raised by enhancement technologies. So today, I give you a few examples, talk about the moral value of enhancement, because I think we should talk, is it really, as I started my presentation, is it really something that makes us better? Are we better off by enhancement, or are only some people better off and others not? That's the issue of enhancement and justice. I skipped that because I thought I had only 30 minutes, so I kept that out, but I forgot to cut it out of this slide. But I will talk about technology fragmentation. Maybe there is some discussion about authenticity, because also part of the enhancement debate that people say, well, the use of technologies, that's, well, it's not you that is have a better performance, it's technology that does the thing. And American philosopher Carl Elliott wrote a whole book, it's called Better Than Well. It was a very wonderful title, Better Than Well, about the use of enhancement technologies, and it said that there is a critique on enhancement that people say are more concentrating on themselves and not looking, lose their, let's say, their interest in society. It's also one of the critiques of the President's Council in Beyond Therapy. Maybe there's some time to talk about that issue as well, but I have not any slides prepared for that one, but I could, if there are any questions about that, I can talk about it in public policy making. So, example, I mentioned a few, modafinil, which I mentioned which can keep you longer awake, cholesterase inhibitors, that was the word forgot exactly. It's a treatment of Alzheimer's, second stage Alzheimer's, dementia is often used to improve memory function. Ritalin, already mentioned, to improve attention. There's also some genetic manipulation, maybe Anders can talk a bit more about it. There's experiments with mice who can improve their memory by use of genetic manipulation. There are some results in the labs. Mood enhancement, the use of antidepressants. Interesting is debate a few weeks ago about Prozac and the role of placebos. So sometimes I wonder where you can have enhancement by way of placebo technology. So it's an interesting issue here. And physical enhancement in sports, for example, EPO, use of EPO and blood doping, but also the use of genetic manipulation, gene doping, which is used, well, for example, you can manipulate genes that they produce more growth hormone, and particularly you can grow, the muscle growth can be reinforced by genetic manipulation. So there's one way of a kind of doping. I will not discuss these issues here, just give you an example. As we are not only talking about cognitive enhancement, that means improvement of memory, improvement of attention. It's also, the whole debate about enhancement has more issues. Not mentioned here what I already said, for example, extension of the lifespan is also seen as a kind of enhancement. It's a wider area of biotechnology that's used, let's say, beyond therapy and to improve our function in various areas of life. So there is an optimistic scenario. Parents have the chance to have children free of genetic diseases, more intelligent, more talented, diverse areas, sports, music, science, aesthetics, stronger, more resistant to diseases. Sometimes I think that enhancement is seen as the culmination of the enlightenment, of the application of technology to improve humanity. And I think you must also see the debate about the benefits of enhancement as in this whole historical context, since the 18th century, the coming of the enlightenment and the use of rationality and technology to improve our society, but also to improve human functioning. Obesity and alcohol might be overcome, for example, vaccination. Nanotechnologies, hardware implantation may repair damage in the human body or enhance brain function. Man-computer interactions, uploaded computers by the human brain, or direct transfer of brain signals to robots or other humans will lead to new communication and control possibilities. So these are all, let's say, very optimistic things, and maybe some of these things will happen, and I think we should prepare ourselves that some of these scenarios will indeed become reality. And some are already reality. And particularly in this context, you see new technologies coming up. Raising ethical issues, it's very important to discuss the ethical issues, and I'm very happy that we can have a meeting like this one today. Are they unequivocally good? Sorry, I'm not a native speaker. But in utilitarianism, it's seen as enhanced technologies are the same as, for example, as education or other social institutions to ameliorate human life. For example, John Harris said, well, we have tried since the Enlightenment, we have improved our education system. We can improve education by use of some cognitive enhancers. Why shouldn't we do it? Because it's the same intention, the same goal we try to reach. Enhancements, his latest book, Enhancing Evolution, for last year in 2007, he says that enhancements per se are not ethically problematic. They are unequivocally good, clearly ethical, unless the downside can be demonstrated and a significant enhancement has the moral high ground. So, in fact, what John Harris says in the book, that the only issue for me is whether are there substantial risks. And if there are no substantial risks, there are only benefits to be expected from the use of enhancement technologies. It's a very radical view. And even, he says, they are a moral obligation, because an obligation to improve ourselves. But I think that we need to think, is enhancement ideally, is it good? What kind of enhancements are good? What do you understand on a good thing? And we need to have a differentiated account, and that is a bit what utilitarianism often has. There's not much a debate about the goals that you try, because utilitarianism kind of was called in philosophy a consequentialist approach. It tried to work the way toward good consequences, but there's not much debate what the good consequences are and how you should prioritize good consequences. Because there are concerns, I already mentioned eugenics. In the first 30, 40 years of the previous century, eugenics was a widespread practice. That means, for example, sterilization of handicapped people, not only in Germany, where people also were killed, but also in the Scandinavian countries, even after the war, that people with learning disabilities were isolated on islands, for example, in Denmark, and also in Sweden, sterilization has gone on for decades, after the Second World War. So eugenics, which actually the birth of eugenics was here in the United Kingdom in the work of Francis Galton end of 19th century. And what eugenics tried to do is wielding out of undesirable traits and handicaps, sterilization, killing of handicapped people, and was based on coercion and state enforced, particularly in Germany during the Nazis, and based on combined with racism. The new eugenics say, well, indeed, we also try to wield out undesirable traits and handicaps, for example, by pre-implantation genetic implantation, that is a technique to select certain embryos with desirable traits and handicaps, promoting desirable traits, for example, what I mentioned, cloning, BGD, prenatal genetic diagnosis, germline therapy. But they say it's based on free choice. For example, Agar wrote a book in 2004 called Liberal Eugenics. They say it's eugenics, maybe it's eugenics, but it's not state-controlled, it's liberal, it's free. You can decide whether you have a PGD treatment, so nobody's forcing you to select only a certain embryo, or use all these technologies to improve your functioning or the people, or to have a better desirable children with more desirable traits. Still, I think handicapped people with handicaps are still very suspicious of enhancement technologies still. And say that even if it's based on free choice, the tendency is to value certain traits and disvalue traits, for example, that we think are important. Particularly the deaf community is saying, well, deafness is just not a handicap, it's just a matter of our identity. So we don't want to have cochlear implants, we don't want any technologies that would change our culture, that would change, will have an impact on our deafness, and we even want to use PGD to have deaf children. So that is a totally different way of thinking. And they are not very happy with saying that enhancement makes us better. Enhancement improves our functioning, because we are doing fine. We have our deaf community. Why should we use technologies to to become a different human being, because they understand themselves, a different human being, when they can hear. So it's, that's why I think we need to have a very differentiated account of what counts as a good, what is the benefit, what is the benefit of enhancement. And even say it's a matter of free choice and personal autonomy, it's still not sad that you can take away all the concerns of people in our society. We think, well, we are degraded, we are not seen as normal human beings. So there are other concerns, and I mentioned a few of them. It's reinforcing competition and individualism in society. For example, like I said, students will use drugs to improve their exams, results, cheating behavior in sports, doping in schools instead of, well, people say, well, what's wrong with using the pills? And one of the critiques, the criticism, is that it's more of a virtue to work hard for your study results instead of taking a pill. So there's a kind, well, this is a different ethical way of looking at. If you say, if you're coming from utilitarianism, you say, okay, is this the best road to a better result? So why don't take a pill? So why make yourself, your life so difficult? While other people say, well, I think I've become a better person by investing energy and try to improve my function by my own means, and that's where all your debate about authenticity comes in. So may widen the gap between the has and has not, and I will come back on that issue in my talk, because I think that's a very important. I think the most important issue, in my view, is the whole issue of justice and the access to enhancement technologies, and I have various concerns about that. Medicalization, disease mongering, meaning that personal behavior, social problems will become what's called medicalized, come under control of the medical system by using medical technologies, biotechnologies, disease mongering. They say that, for example, your school, your work in school as a student becomes subject to medication, and can see, well, if you don't perform well, probably it's kind of a biological defect. And coercing to use technology instead of individual choice and autonomy, and it's sometimes called the looping effect. I will come back to that issue later on, the meaning that there is a way, if technology is there, it's very hard to escape it. You always feel coerced to use it. For example, not many people nowadays will have a mobile phone, and so you think, well, as soon as technology is there, there's a kind of way to become controlled by it. Right, so there were some examples. What's the moral value of enhancement? One way to get a better understanding of the moral value of enhancement is that you try to oppose its goals to those of therapy. And though therapy, as I said, is in most cases the source of enhancement technologies, it's usually seen as something good, but enhancement is often considered as something negative. Think, for example, the whole issue of eugenics is making that many people say, well, is enhancement the right thing to do? Because are we not going back to the enhancement? Are we really the whole issue of about, are we still, is it ourselves who are making these efforts and coming to these results, or is it just a technology? Are we not ruled by technology? I think these are basic intuitions, not only intuitions, but also memories of the past, and say we become a bit suspicious about enhancement. And it's all of the question is, of course, whether it's right to be so suspicious, whether maybe we should have a more open mind. Therapy enhancement. The President's Council on Bioethics already mentioned a report beyond therapy, is that the distinction between therapy and enhancement can be seen as an effort to separate the good and the bad, and the therapy as the good strategy, and the enhancement as the bad one. And I think I don't agree with therapy as the good strategy and enhancement as the bad one. I think there are other ways why I think it could be relevant to think about distinction between therapy and enhancement, more about issues of funding. But you can't say that enhancement is in itself the bad one. I think there's an ambivalence there in enhancement, also in therapy. Therapy can be good and bad. Enhancement can be good and bad. Sometimes therapy, you can think, well, is it a good thing to go on therapy instead of stopping therapy, withdrawal therapy? So not always said that therapy is always the good thing and enhancement is the bad thing. So that's a bit kind of an overstatement here by the President's Council, which I actually do not agree with. Is indeed therapy always good, enhancement always bad or dubious, unacceptable? Therapy and enhancement are to a certain extent overlapping all successful therapies are recurrence enhancements. Zinc, for example, the treatment of its growth hormone can make you feel, can make you also in the field of aging, growth hormone therapy is seen as a way to for successful aging, to have a better way of aging. Certain medical drugs which are used will improve your functioning when you get older. So it can be seen as a kind of enhancement. And some enhancements can also be called therapeutic. So it's very difficult to make this distinction. Some people say, well, let's throw the whole distinction out the window. But I still think that would make difficult to have a debate on the policy issues. I give this an example of Johnny and Billy, which is mentioned by Eric Parents. Eric Parents is a researcher at the Hastings Center, is an important think tank on bioethics in the United States. And he, in his book on enhancement, he gives this case of Johnny. He's a short 11-year-old boy with documented growth hormone deficiency resulting from a brain tumor. His parents are of average height. His predicted adult height without growth hormone treatment is approximately 160 centimeters, about 5 feet 3 inches. So if you give the case of Dan, there comes Billy. And Billy is a short 11-year-old boy, normal GH growth hormone secretion, according to current testing methods. However, his parents are extremely short, has predicted adult height of 160 centimeters, 5 feet 3 inches. Well, in the case of Johnny, I think, well, you could say, well, this kind of growth hormone therapy is a kind of a therapy. In case of Billy, you could see, well, you could see, of course, his parents had the same height, it's particularly the genetic background. So why make him taller? Is that not a kind of enhancement? So the results are both kids will come to a certain same height. One because he has a disease, and the other because it's a genetic situation. So what's the difference between the two? It's very difficult to say why we should fund, for example, the treatment for Johnny and not fund the treatment for Billy. So there we come to, I think, a basic issue, and should society pay for the access to enhancement technologies? And I think, and just often said that distinction between therapy and enhancement, even how difficult it is to make, is relevant for funding decisions. Why? Though not everybody agrees with the first thing. I'll come back to that later on in my presentation. The idea is that therapies or other medical services should preserve and restore health by fighting disease in order to be funded by society. It's not said that every therapy will be funded by society. We have seen many examples, even every day in the papers, of therapies that are not funded because they are maybe work very well, but they were not funded because they're too expensive. And society says, well, if you want to have access to drugs, you have to pay it for your, by your, by, out of your own private financial means. So so that a therapy is a therapy to fight disease or to restore health is a necessary but not a sufficient reason to fund it by a society. And said it considered, and also said as to fulfill wishes and not seen to alleviate your health needs. So we have the distinction in medical ethics that we have the distinction between needs and wants, which is even, it's actually very difficult also to make. But what's an, if you think, well, we should provide treatments that fulfills, you know, that certain needs, but we should not fund treatments that just are fulfilling certain wants or wishes of people. So if enhancement are just wishes, fulfilling wishes, we should not fund them. Well, so that's a bit the theoretical idea behind the distinction between therapy enhancement, needs and wants, and funding or not funding. But actually, and that problem's come already, is here what counts as health, what counts as disease. Even in philosophy of medicine in the past 30, 40 years, there has been debate about what counts as health and what counts as disease. It's very difficult to make that distinction. And that was quite a philosophical distinction, particularly in the 1960s and 70s. And it was, let's say, this whole debate about what about concepts of health and disease came back in the 90s, in terms also of the scarcity of resources, allocation of resources, justice issues, and that you can see, well, we only fund treatments that are providing and health, restoring health, but health is a very wide, there's a very wide range of concepts of health. Some have a very biological definition and some have a more social definition of health. And for example, the biological definition is a very, how to define the goals of medicine, it's part of the debate, is, for example, the theory of Bohr's. Bohr's biostatistical theory of health. He defined health as normal species functioning. And normal species functioning said every the human species has a specific design, and that design is meant to survive and reproduce. So survival and reproduction are the main functions. Now that's normal species for everything that's not, that is hindering survival or reproduction is called a disease. It's very biological. Other kind of health problems are not included. Handicaps or whatever seen as something that falls outside the healthcare system because it's not to do with survival and reproduction. So disease interferes with normal functioning. And American philosopher Norman Daniels, who's working in the tradition of John Hall Rawls, wrote a book in 1985 called Just Healthcare. And he said that he took Bohr's quite a narrow definition of health as a starting point for a theory of justice, and said healthcare contributes to normal functioning in society. And what happens is that normal functioning, we need to function normally because that's the condition to have access to the normal range of opportunities in our society according to your individual opportunity. Not everybody can reach certain positions in our society because not everybody has different talents. And nonetheless, health, let's say disease, hinders you to realize your potential. And that's why he said there's a moral duty of society, there's a moral reason to supply healthcare to enable people to function in society and to realize their opportunities. So there's a moral obligation, or it's said, to protect and restore normal functioning as it protects individual opportunities. That's the argument by Daniels. So Daniels, in 2 or 3 years ago, he wrote a book with two other colleagues from his university in Boston, and it's called A Liberal View of Justice. And well, he said that it can be expected that genetic technology and other biotechnology will be used by the rich and the powerful beyond the medical domain in order to enhance their capacities and opportunities in social life. You can imagine this whole debate: should we fund access to biotechnologies, enhancement technologies, including genetic technologies and pharmaceutical technologies, etc.? Daniels and Buchanan and the people who wrote that book, working from Rawls' theory and Daniel's theory of justice, said, well, actually, we don't think that enhancement is part of restoring normal functioning. So, well, normal functioning enhancement is, say, can we see enhancement more as something that has to do with wishes, with wants? It's not fulfilling a certain need. So, say, more trying to work from that distinction. And they say, well, enhancement technologies do not contribute to normal functioning. Actually beyond normal functioning. There was no reason why, there's no moral obligation of society to provide access to these technologies. That does not mean that we should not deal with the access to technologies, but not within the healthcare system in the first place. And secondly, it's just a matter of if people have the financial means to provide access to enhanced technologies, they should not be hindered in this, but we should also try to mitigate potential the widening of the gap between the better off and the worse off, because enhancement also can be seen as a kind of a positional good, essentially to improve your position in society, for example, if you have access to certain technologies and pharmaceuticals. So they say that there's no reason to equalize differences of capacities by furthering the access to enhancement technologies for all members of our society. So maybe some regulation, but certainly not in the healthcare system, because that's not the task of the healthcare system, because the healthcare system, the main task is to restore normal functioning. So that's, for example, Buchanan, and said the book From Chance to Choice in 2006, written with Daniels and Brock, and say, I quote, just as we do not owe it to our friends or other in general to contribute our resources to make them feel happy when they are unhappy because they have developed extravagant tastes, we do not owe it to others to improve any and every capability that they just to be disadvantaged to them, given their plans of life. So this is a bit the what I call the liberal view of enhanced of justice as applied to the access to enhancement technologies. There's another view, and that is the what called Amartya Sen has written on an egalitarian theory of justice. And he has a completely different approach and said intelligence and good memory can be essential for success in the competition for social positions, which certainly is the case. So what enhancement technologies can do is it can result in a more even distribution of these capabilities between individuals, which is more just from an egalitarian point of view. So if you see, if you forget about the whole distinction between enhancement therapy, forget about the role of the healthcare system. We do have differences in access to certain positions in our society. Some of these differences are due, array, of course, by differences in genetics or genetic or physical or whatever reasons. If technologies can be used to equalize the opportunities for people, there is a duty to do so. That's a very egalitarian point of view. And justice may require intervention to counteract natural inequalities by means of biotechnology interventions, whatever they constitute disease or not. So he said, forget about the old disease thing. Enhancements can give better chances for everybody in our society, particularly for people who are worse off. So there is an obligation to supply enhancement technology, not just treatments, whenever a national inequality can be prevented by enhancement. So they have a much wider view than Buchanan and Daniels. So and to oppose them, to give the different views, is that the liberal view, say, enhancement technology do not contribute to normal functioning, no need to furnish technologies as part of a social healthcare system. The distinction between therapy and enhancement is relevant. Leave the distinction would seriously affect liberty. No supply in healthcare system, but regulation could be needed in society, particularly to mitigate the widening gap. The egalitarian view say enhancements may equalize opportunities of individual society, should be funded by society, not necessarily within the healthcare system only. So distinction between therapy and enhancement disappears. Both are affecting opportunities. And doesn't matter how to supply enhancement technologies, whether in the healthcare system or over the counter or the internet, wherever. Right. The other issue is that, and this also related to the issue with justice, is an issue about there's a kind of intuition we should not use technologies to improve our function this way. It's a kind of there's a fear that they will dominate our lives, we cannot escape using them. Carl Elliott already mentioned the book Beyond Well, and he had a workshop in Maastricht last year, and he said, he called this the looping effect, and he refers to the iron hacking of enhancement technologies. And the looping effect means, he gave the example, you produce, by producing smaller books with smaller letters, there's a necessity to provide people who previously didn't need glasses with glasses. And he said, he gave examples of Ritalin and SRIs, so that you have a kind of a situation that you cannot escape the use of a certain technology. And he thinks that enhancement technologies are part of this looping effect. They may reinforce societal pressures to conform with specific norms. This reminds me, when he talked about it, to the work of a German sociologist in the first part of our century, of the previous century, sorry, the 20th century, is Max Weber. And Max Weber talked what he called about the iron cage of technology. And what does he mean with that, the iron cage of technology? He said that he made distinction between first of all, you called instrumental reason. That is a way to get knowledge, to get technical knowledge about the world and to improve the world. It's a kind of called instrumental reason, as reason to improve your functioning, not to improve your function, but to improve the social world, the physical world, in order to dominate the world and to use it for your own means. It is a kind of, it makes you more free. That's also part of the Enlightenment. People come more free by having a technological means to dominate the world. But on the other hand, what he called the Entzauberung der Welt, I mean, disenchantment of the world, that is, the world got less meaning. And he called the iron case of technology also, and that's the other kind of rationality. No, he called this the goal rationality. A certain goal is to dominate the world, to improve the world, to get a better world, and he called it goal rationality. There's no evaluation here. It's just it was an empirical way of empirical understanding of empirical reality. There is no ethical issue there. He opposes to what he called the Wertrationalität, that means the value rationality compared to the Zweckrationalität. The Wertrationalität is more talking about the role of values and what's important in our life. Should we use a certain technology or not? And he's saying the whole discussion about values, about what's good life, what is justice, what is the role of solidarity, and those issues, I think that, he said, well, that is plays only a secondary role, because we are so impressed by technology and so impressed by what technology can do for us that we forget about what's effectively the goal of technology, what's the role of technology compared to our own values. And so he had two kinds of rationality, the goal rationality, instrumental reason, control, effectiveness, bureaucracy. He wrote, very famous for his study of bureaucracy. It's the modernization of the Western world from modern times. It's modern science and technology. And there you have the value rationality. It's more about the good life, the meaning of life, the value of social relationship. But he said it's controlled by the goal rationality. So why is this important for this? The philosopher Charles Taylor, in his book Ethics of Authenticity, referred to the work of Max Weber and said that there is an instrumental reason, which is the control reason. There's a tendency to estrange individuals from each other and to atomize human relationships. He said, and I quote his book, Ethics of Authenticity, he said, a fragmented society is one whose members find harder and harder to identify with their political society as a community. And this lack of identification may reflect an atomistic outlook in which people come to see society purely instrumentally. It also helps to entrench atomism because the effectiveness, absence of effective common action throws people back on themselves. And so that's what Taylor said, is that what using Weber's analysis, he said what Weber has pointed out is the fact that technology is individualizing our society, which makes it so difficult that to come to a common understanding of the good life. Taylor is a bit of what he called a communitarian philosopher. He said that technology, I can't think he's a full communitarian philosopher, but he's worried about our coming understandings, our the coming good, and the things that we think are important for our lives, the values. And he said technology has a tendency to that debate is going away by the potential impact of technology on our lives. But Taylor is not anti or a technophobe or whatever. No, he said technology can contribute to improve daily life as science technology. And he said what technology has done, in fact, they have improved our life considerably. It's compared to the 1600, our society has made tremendous progress. So, and that's a good thing. And but we should incorporate, it's important, it was in what he called a shared understanding how society should take care of the needs of human existence and how we can support, and particularly weaker groups, to take care of their needs. And that's, I think that is a concern. And that's a concern which I started also with in my talk about who will benefit from the enhanced technologies. So if you, with this little tour around Weber, and go back to your enhancement issue, is, well, the goals of enhancement are generally formulated in utilitarian terms, like diminishing of suffering, more effective control of our bodies and minds. Think, for example, what John Harris said about enhancement. He said it's a good thing, if there are no potential risks, so we should go ahead. But the issue of why we are trying to achieve good control and to what extent to which goal is not formulated with the enhancement goal themselves. It's just a matter of instrumental reason. Well, I think we should also talk about the other kinds of reason, which Rabel mentioned. And as a result, enhancement technology has set to focus individuals on their own appearance and capacities, defining our society in new genetic or enhanced class. So these are very, of course, very general remarks, but it's just a kind of to see what's a kind of reflection on consequences of an unhindered use of the technologies. And I think particularly, and I think a quote here, Francis Fukuyama is our post-home future, is quite critical of enhancement, not in always, but in always ways, but he also mentioned that particularly genetic enhancement not be a threat to the dignity of normal adult human beings, but rather those who are defined as characterizing human specificity. The largest groups are the unborn people, the infants, terminally sick, elderly people with debilitating disease, and disabled. This is a bit of a worry. Fukuyama is a bit conservative on enhancement, not so conservative as the President's Council on Bioethics, which is very conservative on enhanced technologies, but he raises some concerns, and I think it's not bad to raise concerns, particularly for those groups who are were not able to defend themselves and who have a problem here. So my view is that I personally believe that enhanced technology can really make an important contribution to our biological, psychological, and social well-being, but I think we should also think about public policy making in this context. Particularly the access to technologies should look at the impact on the position of handicapped individuals and the care of vulnerable groups, first of all. I think that's always been the main issue of my work, is that these are the weak groups in our society, and we should think about their position in the first place. Also think about if it's widening the gap between the haves and the have-nots, for example, and what I think I have some sympathy for the egalitarian point of view, that enhancement is really something that can affect positions in our society. So my conclusion is that enhancement technology need not necessarily result in fragmentation and inauthentic existence, meaning the role of technology here. So they can also open up individuals, can improve social relations, they are introduced within a framework of important human values and solidarity with the weak and vulnerable, justice, dignity, and responsibility. This is a bit, of course, very general values, but there's no need, there's no reason not to discuss them and to see how they can affect our policies. That's what's called the value rationality. So that was my conclusion. Thank you very much. And
Do you want me to take questions now?
We're going to do questions at the end.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Professor Termeulen. We are going to move on now into our tea and coffee break. During the tea and coffee break, let me tell you that we have paper copies of the presentation we've just seen, which will be handed out. Tea and coffee is at the back. We will regather at 3:10. And also during the break, you may want to have a browse of our previous symposium reports, including Robots and Rights, which was our most recent symposium. So look forward to seeing everyone again at 3:10.